Welcome to the podcast of Thousand Harbors Zen, featuring talks with Cohen France. This podcast is made possible by generous donations from our listeners. To contribute or to learn more about our community, please visit thousandharborszen.com.
Before I really start tonight, I want to acknowledge something about how I'm doing and maybe about how you're doing. I have this image in my mind, maybe some of you relate, if you've ever had lower back pain, there's a way that you walk, right? There's a way that you steady yourself, you hold yourself in a very controlled way so that there aren't any sudden movements and so that you aren't bending in particular ways, right? You don't grab something that's too low. And if the situation is bad enough, if you need to long enough, then over time, over the course of days or weeks, you start to normalize this way of walking, this way of holding yourself. You don't think only about the thing you're trying to prevent. It becomes kind of natural. And then there's a sharp sound and you turn around quickly, or you drop something, whatever it is. And it all just unravels. You feel that jerk in your back, and suddenly you can barely stand, or maybe you can't stand at all. I feel, when I look at all that's happening right now, all that we're experiencing with coronavirus and with everything we see on the news, how people are treating each other, how our institutions are holding up, the fires that are burning, the storms. I think we're all engaged in this constant act of trying to kind of hold it together, to act normal to the extent that we can, which is a natural reaction. But over time, that act of just keeping it together becomes normalized, so that we're contracted all the time, so that there's something we're always kind of keeping over there, a response, and then something happens and it reveals the effort we've been keeping up, because something cracks, something gets through, and it's different for everybody. I don't know what it is for you, but I suspect you've had these moments of hearing something or seeing something or thinking something, and suddenly you're kind of broken by that in a way that you couldn't have seen coming. I've had two in the last week, neither of which I would have predicted. The first was, actually I don't remember the order now, but waking up and seeing that the actor Chadwick Boseman had died. I haven't seen most of his movies, but I understand that his work was in bringing symbols to life. And I had seen some of that, and I had felt some of that. And when I saw that he was gone, It felt like too much, even though I actually knew nothing about him until that day. I started reading and hearing this outpouring of love and this outpouring of grief and connecting with it in some ways and in other ways feeling apart from it, because he mattered. His work mattered in part because of systems that I'm a part of and have always been a part of. So I'm feeling this loss, and at the same time, I'm recognizing a kind of distance that hurts. And that's one. It's a particular kind of jolt, and I kind of choked on it. And the other was watching this story unfold about the shooter in Kenosha. This boy who went with a rifle and ended up shooting protesters. And this was a different kind of jolt. This was a different kind of feeling of something landing in my guts. Because this is something I do understand. This is something I'm not far from at all. I wrote something about this on Facebook today. I grew up in a town in Montana where vigilantes were celebrated. We have a Vigilante Day parade every year, and the high school students dress up as cowboys and they carry guns around, and they go through the downtown, and sometimes we have a noose on the back of a truck, and some, you know, criminal cowboy is swinging in the wind, and that was just part of growing up. It was fun. And also in high school, when I was inducted into the Honor Society from my school, the Honor Society was called the 3777s. And 3777 is a reference to the dimensions of a grave. And the vigilantes in Montana used to write it, you know, they'd write it on somebody's fence as a threat. Watch out. These days, it's actually on the uniform of the Montana Highway Patrol, and it's the Honors Society from my school. I grew up in a place where a particular story about justice had been normalized. I internalized it, everybody internalized it. It's not that the people I grew up with all want to be vigilantes. It's that there's a narrative, a romantic narrative, a heroic narrative, a gritty narrative about how problems get solved that in my experience was never questioned by anyone, including me, growing up. So when I watch the news and I see this unfolding and I see it happening not just in one place but in multiple places, it's remembering something that I had forgotten. It's seeing clearly, maybe for the first time, what that meant when I was a child and how it plays out when things get a little out of control. And again, I had this feeling of being broken open. A few moments of not knowing how to get back to that place of feeling solid. What I actually plan to talk about tonight is kind of about that second story, not about the being broken open exactly, though that's where I'm coming from, but a kind of recognition of culture and the degree to which we all hold beliefs that we don't know. I hear this phrase sometimes, people talk about our most cherished beliefs, that something attacks our most cherished beliefs, it undermines our most cherished beliefs. Any belief can be dangerous. Your most cherished belief can be very dangerous. But your most cherished belief is nowhere near as heavy as the belief you don't know you have. The thing that you believe so strongly that you can't even begin to question it because it's never occurred to you. This is at the very heart of Buddhism. It's at the very heart of practice. Whether we're talking about it through the lens of racism, through the lens of sexism, through the lens of something like capitalism, there are ways in which the world around you is moving that are so fundamental to your idea of what reality is that you cannot separate yourself from them, not without an incredible jolt. There are lots of stories we can tell about why we practice, or what this practice offers. But similar to what we were talking about last week, and recognizing preferences, recognizing our relationship to preferences, is the question of unconscious bias, unconscious belief. Buddhist practice on so many levels is about making the unconscious conscious. Not necessarily so that we can transform it, not because seeing something makes it go away, but because there's nothing we can do until we notice. Sometimes we have the privilege of that jolt, and it allows us to recognize that there's something we weren't seeing about ourselves, that there's something we've swallowed and metabolized, and it's become us. Sometimes we don't have that privilege, and so we come back again and again and again to this idea of not knowing, not as some exalted spiritual state, not as some exercise, but as a fact, as a recognition that even if there are things we can't know, we can work from the understanding that there is so much that we don't know. When I was a kid, there were so many things. There were magazines, there were Guns and Ammo magazine, right? It was always just around, not just in my house, but anybody's house. You'd sit around, you'd flip through it, you'd look at all the cool stuff that you wanted, the cool knives, right? And I see now Facebook always wants to sell me clothes. And for whatever reason, Facebook understands, maybe because I'm not the only one, that when it tries to sell me anything with the word tactical in front of it, it tries to sell me tactical pants and tactical jackets and tactical vests, and they all look vaguely military or vaguely like superhero, like a superhero on a casual day kind of outfits. They have this, there's such a simple idea about masculinity and about being action ready. But the boy in me who looked through those magazines sees those ads, and my first thought is, oh wow, that's really nice. I like that. That's not because of something inherent in me. That's because I was taught to like that thing. I was taught to like it then, and it has stewed around inside me for 40 plus years so that it has evolved alongside the culture, so that I see it in its modern form, in its contemporary form, and I still like it, even though I want nothing to do with the trappings of it. It got me. And I can't just tell myself not to like that. I can laugh at myself about it. I can kind of roll my eyes. What I can do is I can notice that preference and I can interrogate it. I can pause. I can say, why? Why do I like this? When I think something is unfair, when I've done something and then I don't feel I was paid enough, I can spin forever in that story about justice, or I can pause and I can ask myself, what about me? What about the way I was raised? What about the way I was taught made me believe that everything needs to have a transactional component? And the answer is everything. Everything did. So if I want to respond to that instinct in myself, to want, not just to want, but to want a square deal, I need to stop and ask myself how I arrived here. It's because I've internalized so much. Like I said last week, I don't think there's any magic to this practice that just lets us out of it. There's also no version of you that isn't culturally influenced. There's no version of you that somehow drops everything you learned as a child. How could you? Who would you be? So that's not the point. The point for me this week is noticing that the things that we believe on that level, the things that have become us, that have become deeper than beliefs, they survive because we manage to hold ourselves in a particular way. The reality of this moment is not supporting your narrative. The reality of this moment is not supporting your idea about who you are. It's not all perfectly aligned. In every breath, in every moment, in every encounter, you are receiving information that can cause you to question everything, every assumption you hold, every deeply held sense of who you are. It's all on the table, all the time. And if it doesn't feel that way, again, it's because we've learned to hold ourselves in such a way that we don't feel it that way. Why do I say all this? I say all this because whether it happened this week or it's going to happen next week, you're going to be broken open. Something is going to come at you from an angle you did not see. Something is going to be one thing too many. And for a second, or an hour, or a day, or a month, you're going to feel cracked open, and you're going to have to pull yourself back together. There is an element of Buddhism, in particular an element of Zen, that would appear to be all about how we hold it together, right? you see the Zen people and they stand in a particular way and they sit in a particular way and sometimes they speak in a particular way. It's very tight. I want to talk about that, and I think I'll talk about it next week. But for this week, what I want to say is when that moment comes, when you are broken open, let it happen. That is the only chance of seeing through some of this. We break open in those moments because something comes through that's too much for our narrative to withstand, maybe even just for a second. That's a gift. Every time it's too much, every time you think you can't hold it, something is being revealed to you about what you've been holding at bay, about what you've been trying to control, about what you've been hoping not to see, maybe for the last 6 months and maybe for your whole life. Let those moments come. Let it hurt a little bit. I'll stop there.
You have been listening to a Thousand Harbors Zen podcast. Please visit thousandharborszen.com.